Well, I believe the appointed hour's arrived, so we'll plow on here. This is Rich Rigby with the Idaho Department of Water Resources. This is a meeting with respect to the rulemaking effort on Rule 50, which is the conjunctive administration rules for the department. And we've got a list. We tried to catch people as they came on the phone. Somebody just joined.
Yeah, Rich, this is Greg Sullivan.
Thank you, Greg, City of Pocatello. And so let's just quickly go around the room and introduce the people in the room for those that are on the phone. Rich Rigby.
Kimmy White.
Megan Carter.
Libby Blades.
Alan Wiley.
Jennifer Succo.
Matt Weaver.
All those people are with the department, by the way. So, Chris.
Chris Bromley.
Garrett Baxter, attorney for the department.
Brenda Tominaga.
Lynn Tominaga, Idaho Groundwater Appropriators.
Okay, and Sean Vincent's joining us too. And those on the phone, we've got Mike Kramer, Bryce Contour, Mike Lewis, Kent Fletcher, Jackson Higgs, Linda Lemon, Jerry Rigby, Dale Swenson, Greg Sullivan, and Greg Sullivan. Yeah, that's it. So does that make sense? Anybody else we missed that wants to be noted? Okay. I'll try. I think most of the people that are on the phone have been around the block a couple times, so I'm not going to try to get into a lot of detail, but I would like to follow the agenda and provide some historic background on where things have gone and where we are to this point before we open it up for discussion. So I guess we could start with the big bang, but I think for purposes of this meeting, we'll start in 1993 when a call for priority delivery was made by a couple of brothers in the diverting out of the Curran Tunnel, the Mussers. Somebody just joined?
Yes, this is Matt Howard with Reclamation.
I'm Matt. So, and the Supreme Court ultimately ruled that the department had an obligation to provide, meet the priority call. The first major action following that by the department was the conjunctive administration rules, which were published in October of 1994. And things remained relatively quiet until 2003, when delivery calls were made by water users in the Thousand Springs area. In 2004, the version 1.1 of the Eastern Snake Plain Aquifer model was adopted for use. In 2005, delivery calls were made by other major users, including the Surface Water Coalition. Somebody else just joined?
Yes.
Want to identify yourself, please?
Yes, I'm Bruce Blackmer. I'm phoning from Butte County, Idaho. I'm a retired employee of the Federal Department of Agriculture. I work for NRCS here in Arco and Indrid.
Okay, thank you. So we're reviewing the history right now of where we got to today. So after these delivery calls in 2005, various hearings were held and orders issued, so on and so forth. In 2010, on November 10th, Clear Springs Food filed a petition to amend Rule 50. And an initial meeting was held in Boise on March 9th. A subsequent meeting, we call the kickoff meeting, was held on April 6th in Boise in 2011. And on the 19th and 20th of April, we had meetings in Arco, Chubbuck, and Burley. Comments were provided, and the comment period expired or concluded on May 31st of 2011. And then after considering comments, so forth, the director issued a letter to the water users on August 11th. I will walk through that a little bit later. Basically delaying consideration of the rule change until an updated version of the Eastern Snake Plain Aquifer model is complete. That got complicated on December 13th of 2011 when Rangan Inc. filed they had filed an earlier petition for delivery. and they asked for that to be revisited. Garrick, is that the right description of that?
I would say they filed a new delivery call.
A new delivery call, okay. So and the parties decided that they needed to wait for version 2.0. Ultimately, 2.0 was replaced by 2.1 for technical reasons. So in November of 2012, version 2.1 of the model was released. January of 2013, the Eastern Snake Plain Hydrologic Committee endorsed the use of EASPAM 2.1, and the Erangan hearing commenced on May 1st of 2013. January 29th of this year, the director issued a final order with respect to the Erangan delivery call. And on April 11th of this year, the director issued a letter to the water users announcing reinitiation of this process to consider modifications to the area of common groundwater supply. I just want to briefly walk through the letter of August 9th, 2011, and I want to kind of get people oriented to the web page, and then I'll talk about future actions. So the letter to the water users outlined the comments. We received some 180 comments, and we tried to outline the major themes that we received, pro and con on the change. Then we quoted some from the injunctive management rules, and there's a couple places I want to quote here. The area of common groundwater supply, having a common groundwater supply, is defined as follows: a groundwater source within which the diversion and use of groundwater or changes in groundwater recharge affect the flow of water in a surface water source, or within which the diversion and use of water by a holder of a groundwater right affects the groundwater supply available to holders of other groundwater rights. Another one is Rule 31.03, criteria for findings. A groundwater supply will be determined to be an area having a common groundwater supply if A, the groundwater source supplies water to or receives water from a surface water source. Now, I say that mainly because we received a lot of comments that referred to, I believe it was Section 2 of Rule 50, which essentially stated the facts that the ESPA, the Eastern Snake Plain Aquifer, receives water from and provides water to the Snake River. And that it does in about, I think it's 7 specific locations. I don't think that's the criteria for determining what the area of common groundwater supply should be. I think that gets back to Rule 31 that I just read. So anyway, that's the letter. Now, the web page, for those that want to review this issue, we've got a lot of information on the web. If you go to idwr.idaho.gov, in the about halfway down the page, in the center of the page, is a rectangular box. And it's got, under the first tab is what's new, and on the left-hand column on the bottom are the conjunctive management rules, proposed boundary changes. So if you click on that, across the top, you'll find 4 tabs. They are general information, related documents, map documents, and meetings. And I would refer you to those, and I just want to briefly walk through a couple of those. The related documents contains, I counted them this morning, about 40 some separate documents, many pages of documents going back to 1969 and earlier. It also includes related links, mainly to the model and meeting issues, and all of the comments that have been received to date. The section under map documents includes some new maps that were recently developed that we would refer you to, and we've got copies here in the room, and we'll bring them to the local meetings that we're going to have next week. And then the meeting section does include the information on the meetings that we will have. So now, let me talk briefly about the our process and schedule. I think that'll conclude the first part of the agenda, and then we can open it up for comments and questions. So we've got a meetings Monday and Tuesday of next week. On Monday, June 2nd, at 10 o'clock a.m., we have a meeting in the Butte County Middle School Auditorium in Arco. That afternoon at 3 p.m., we have a meeting in Rexburg at the American Lodge and Suites. On Tuesday, the 3rd, we have a meeting at 10 o'clock in the Best Western in Pocatello on Bench Road. That afternoon at 3:30, we've got a meeting in Burley at the Best Western. Now, let's talk about comments. As I mentioned earlier, we've received some 180 comments, and we will receive additional comments, and I suggest a deadline of 21 days after the date of the last local meeting, which would be June 24th. Now, people do not need to feel obligated to submit additional comments. The comments we received to date are part of the record and will be fully considered. But if you have, particularly if you have new information, you probably want to submit it, but you don't have to submit it to repeat what's been said. So, what's our plan of action from now? Within the state government, we have a deadline of August 29th to submit any rule changes to the Department of Administration. So that's our working deadline for a decision whether to adopt a rule change. If a decision is made not to adopt a change, we will send all of the parties a copy of our determination and post it on the web. If the decision involves a change to the current rule, a proposed rule will be developed by August 29th, or would be, I think, and, assuming we get through it, you know, in a proper way. That's a proposed rule, and then there would be an opportunity for public comment and probably a hearing on the proposed rule. And if action proceeds to a final rule with a scheduled as we anticipate it could, the final rule would then become subject to legislative approval during the 2015 legislative session. Now, that's a broad outline, not trying to hold ourselves to a specific outcome, and we always reserve the right to get smarter and to learn more information. So that's kind of the background, I think, that I wanted to go through. So, and the next item on our agenda is comments and discussion, so I'll open that up at this time. Well, it's been a good meeting.
I have a question.
Sure.
I take it the brown areas is the area that's going to be added in as part of the change in the rule.
Well, I don't know that I've got the same color map you do, Lynn. There's a black line that identifies the current boundary of the current model, version 2.1.
Right.
The proposal is to include all areas within that outer, you know, that.
Oh,
that.
The black.
Yes. Yes, that's it.
So it's just so everybody's following along. The map you're looking at is the one titled in the upper left-hand corner, ESPA boundaries. Is that right? Lynn, that's the one you're looking at?
Yeah, that's the one.
Okay.
Hey, Rich, excuse me for interrupting. This is Randy Mudge. What the, just identify the map is and you review it, so those don't come.
Okay, the maps, by the way, are under the, I think it's the third tab on the conjunctive management page. It's map. And map documents, and it would be, let me look, see if I can.
So
The first one.
It's the first one? Okay, thank you. Thank you. Yes.
Rich, this is Brian Contour. I'm also looking at the first one, ESPA-TRIPS1.pdf. There's some area in there like Crooked Creek, which is between Birch Creek and Medicine Lodge Creek. It's not shown as being tributary to the ESPA, and so I'm wondering, what's the status? Is that determined to be non-tributary, or does it just not get polygons drawn?
Well, I think your second assumption is the correct one, Bryce. I'll refer to Rick, though, if you want to add anything. Rick Raimondi.
So, Bryce, you may remember the tributary basins shown on there, and they were developed, I think, as part of tributary underflow calculations for ESPAM 1.1 and then later 2.1.
Okay.
And they're most likely areas, if you take the base elevation of those gauges, it's inclusive of the area that's higher than those gauges in that those watersheds. This was just developed for kind of, I guess, purpose of discussion, but those other areas that are outside, we'd have to do a more detailed hydrographic analysis to determine, you know, where they belong as far as tributaries.
Oh, okay, and then a follow-up. I guess it would be the last one. It's ESPA _GW_POUS_master, and it's got some irrigated areas. Irrigated acres inside, so many acres, et cetera. So those counts exclude the irrigated acres that fall in those brown areas that aren't shown as part of the trib basins. Is that a correct assumption?
No, they include all the green in trib basins and the brown areas.
So if we've got and the brown areas?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, thanks, Rick.
Other questions?
This is Greg. Can you direct me to specifically the language or the pleading that specifically describes the scope of the petition? I mean, does it say somewhere that the proposal is to adopt the ESPAM 2.1 boundary, or is it possible that you could go beyond that or within that?
So if you look at the under the documents tab under the 2010 period, you'll see the original filing from Clear Springs Foods. And basically, it referred
to... That was for ESPAM 1.1, I thought.
That's correct.
So where has it been modified to request ESPAM 2.1, or has it?
It hasn't been modified. That request hasn't been modified. We do have a new model, official model boundary, though, if you will.
Well, is the question then adopt ESPAM 1.1 or not, or is it more general that we can work arguing about what boundary to adopt?
Greg, this is Garrick.
It could be anything.
Greg, this is Garrick. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Oh, good. I think early on when this process started, it became clear that the petition was a request for the department to reconsider the current definition of the boundary, and I think the petition first identified this request to broaden it, to make it consistent with the boundary. I think early on in those conversations, though, it became clear that the rule doesn't necessarily have to be limited to just the petition or the request limited by the petition. In fact, I think a number of people suggested it should be implemented in a broader sense, not just limited to only what was identified in the petition. And that's how the department's been operating, is to stand back and take a look at it and say, well, we'll take comments from individuals to explain exactly how they think it should be identified. We haven't put any limitations saying we will not accept any comments that suggest that it could be broader than just what is identified in the petition.
And so how does the process proceed then? Will the department will consider all the comments and then propose a boundary that then there can be a hearing about?
That is one avenue. The department might say that there is not going to modify the boundary at all. I think we're in a information gathering stage to collect information and collect comments from people to then make a decision from.
Okay, thank you.
I have another question. This is Lynn. Why was there not more basins included as part of the model boundaries? The seems like the information is there.
Rick?
Can you give me an example of what one you might be talking about, Lynn?
Well, you have the Blackfoot River and also the Portneuf, and they, when the flows are high, they are also contributors to the Snake River. The Littlewood and the Bigwood also. So why do you have, you're only including some when there are other basins that actually have surface flows that come in and contribute to the Eastern Snake Plain, and they're excluded?
Well, I'll just say you're getting to the heart of one of the issues that we're trying to consider here in this issue, because the model wasn't developed to identify all of the lands. It was developed as a tool to, administer water rights. So, Rick, you want to carry on?
So as Rich said, I mean, under the true definition of common groundwater, these tributary basins would fit that definition, but we're now involved in deciding whether to include them or not.
I think the short of it, Lynn, is that the request is essentially has been made for the department to treat the boundary as a surrogate for the area common groundwater. The boundary that is established in the model wasn't intended to be used for this specific purpose, but the statement has been made, well, we have an identified circle drawn around an area. Is that an appropriate surrogate for the area common groundwater? The boundary wasn't intended to serve this purpose originally. It's drawn, I'm sure Alan or Jennifer could more appropriately describe it, but it's a boundary drawn around an area that the model still takes in and considers water coming from, for example, the Bigwood, but identifies a discrete point at that boundary mark where it says, okay, we can figure out the tributary underflow coming in. We don't need to draw the boundary specifically around the Bigwood to consider figure out how much water is coming in through that particular area. I don't know if Jennifer or Alan, you want to add anything to that.
You did a nice job.
the model treats water as being one of two ways. It's either tributary underflow, or it's part of the model, and is, you know, the groundwater rights, all the rights are in there, and it's subject to the computations in the model. And Alan, as I recall, there was some discussion about moving the boundary up to bedrock or up to an appropriate measuring point where it was possible to get measured inflows instead of having to estimate tributary flows. It was just a matter of what's the best way to make the model work, not what's the best way to identify all of the land that contributes to the ESPA.
Lynn, I think the intent of the model was to...
John, you want to come closer to the microphone?
...represent the Eastern Snake Plain aquifer, which is, you know, the basalt aquifer system. And in fact, the area of common groundwater, the original boundary, was the USGS's determination back in the day of what the extent of basalt was. And so this initial model boundary extended a little bit further, but that was mostly for modeling convenience in order to accurately represent the inflows to the basalt system. So it wasn't intended to capture necessarily the entire area of contributing water. Does that make sense?
Well, and I understand. I guess my concern is if you include these areas that are the model boundaries, then they also become part of the curtailment orders. Then the director they'll be part of any curtailment order. And if you're going to affect the groundwater users in those areas, shouldn't you affect all groundwater users in those tributaries too?
Thanks for the question. That's a good question.
And most of them are not organized or have any mitigation plans like IGWA does. And I think it's a place of hardship upon those areas. And but that's my opinion. That's not necessarily my board's opinion, but that's
my opinion. Is it the department's view that it needs to have an integrated and comprehensive model that's coincident with the area of common groundwater supply in order to do administration?
I don't think that's the case, Greg.
Hey, Rich, Mike Creamer here, and since you've got so many folks that have been involved in the modeling efforts, maybe you or one of them can answer this question for me. Is there something in the works to expand the model to bring in these additional areas that have tributary underflow into the ESPA that everyone has been talking about this afternoon, or is this going to be the extent of the area of common groundwater supply to the extent it's defined by the model boundaries only?
So Mike, we just came out with a new model, and the subject of the model boundary hasn't come up in another meeting, or is it scheduled? So it's just, we haven't discussed that at all.
And I suspect that discrete question is probably bigger than everything else that is on the table for the modeling group. That would be a big effort, I would think.
Well, I know. I guess I'm just trying to confirm whether the department's policy or the direction of the petition is that an area of common groundwater supply for administration of groundwater rights under the conjunctive management rules is only can be defined by a model boundary. That seems to be the criteria. If we have a model for it, then it is part of an area of common groundwater supply for administration purposes. And if we don't, it won't be. And I'm wondering whether is that the criteria?
Mike, this is Garrick. No, that's not the criteria. And I think it's important that people understand, again, just because that boundary is drawn on there, for example, looking at the transition on the maps between the Bigwood River and the ESPA, although the boundary stops there, just below Silver Creek, at least on the map I'm looking at as a reference to Silver Creek, doesn't mean the model doesn't consider that tributary inflow. The model is still considering that tributary inflow. So we're not, the department at this point isn't saying we're going to be limited to only what is the current boundary as to the model. Again, the model is potentially a surrogate for how we identify the area common groundwater. Those two don't need to be tied to each other.
Okay.
And one of the concerns that we've had is that we don't want, we're uncomfortable, I guess, having the modeling committee deal with those kinds of broader policy implications. Their job's big enough trying to get a model that works, and we really don't want to burden them if we can help it with these kinds of questions. There were, I think, it's possible that some other people joined that didn't get a chance to identify themselves. So if anyone's on the phone that we didn't identify earlier, please let us know.
Thank you. This is Randy Fudge, just appearing as attorney for Nick Lund. I was on mute when you took the name previously. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Randy. Any others?
Hey, Rich, and I know that these maps are busy as they are, but would there be a way to also do an overlay of what the old 1.1 boundary was, just to see visually, since we're looking at the area of common groundwater supply, we're looking at 2.1, it might just be helpful for comparison's sake to see where the old 1.1 boundary was.
That map is on the web page.
It is, okay.
If you go to the first page and scroll all the way down to the bottom, it's got a, I think it says proposed boundary changes. Click on that link and then it'll show, and I think that map is on there.
Okay.
Now we can add that to this if we need to. I guess we'd rather not at this stage. So take a look at that and see if that gives you what you need.
Great, thanks, Rich.
So is the yellow in this picture, the first picture that you're talking about, is that the original 1.1?
That is the current area of common groundwater okay. supply.
I guess I have one more question. To include those basins that have irrigated agriculture, groundwater in particular, how long would it take to incorporate those as part of the modeling exercise?
The modeling exercise? Well, I'd say at a minimum that'd get us back onto a 5-year track probably for the next model version. We were hoping to update every couple years, with new information to keep the model
okay.
improved.
So whenever you come out with a new model version, then the boundaries will change for the common groundwater area?
I don't think we can say that that's a okay. fact. I think it may happen, but I think that's a separate question. As information is gathered, and so on, then the committee makes those kind of decisions.
This is Kent Fletcher. I just looked at that map, or those maps that you referred to that dealt with the proposed boundary changes. All of those maps state that they're to EFAM 2, and I don't know if there's a change in the boundary as a result of EFAM 2.1 or not.
Yeah, there were some.
Do you know that?
Yes, there were some slight changes, Kent. And Chris asked us a related question. So if you go down to the first page on the web page, the very bottom, it says proposed boundary changes. If you click on that,
yeah.
you'll get a bunch of additional maps, and one of those maps at least. Identifies the original 1.1 boundary with the version 2.1, not the boundary. And I think it's even broken down by each of the smaller areas, too.
Yeah, those are the maps I was looking at, and they're all labeled model 2.0. Or this is model 2.
Well, and see, that was before... Well, let me ask a question for clarification. Was there about any boundary changes from 2.0 to 2.1?
No.
No, there were not any Kent. So that is the model. That is the boundary under 2.1. Jennifer?
Okay, well, that was my question.
Oh, that's all I was going to say. I think that was his question.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And there were not changes between 2.0 and
2.1.
Yeah. This is Greg. Are all the surface water lines up these tributaries administered against the Snake River? Or in conjunction with the Snake River?
I'm not sure they are.
No.
Is there an issue related to, you know, with having an area where the groundwater rights are administered and the surface water rights aren't?
I think we have various areas of the state that we have transitioned in administration, and maybe administration hasn't happened in a way that all water rights have been administered in a particular location vis-a-vis all other water rights at one point in time. I think you raise an issue out there that are we moving towards a time and place where we're going to have expanded surface and groundwater administration? We might, but that's not the question that we've been tasked with answering here. The question of the petition is, what should the area of common groundwater be? And that's the question that we're going to be exploring here in this proceeding.
Well, I just heard of surface water rights up some of these tributaries, you know, that divert, you know, 20, 50 CFS, just being given a pass, and yet we're talking about administering groundwater rights up some of these tributaries as well. So seems like there's an issue of fairness out there.
Any other questions? Well, it's been fun, guys. Thanks for your attendance. We'll see some of you Monday and Tuesday, I guess, and continue our discussions. Thanks a lot.
Rich, before you sign off, what are you going to do at these local meetings that's different than what you've done today on the telephone?
Well, we're going to take questions, Kent, and talk individually about, you know, the local areas and maybe that's, but we're, it's about the same. I don't see a lot different.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.